From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to A Juno Afternoon. We're back. It's Wednesday, June 7th, 2023. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Cheesh Hawa for joining the conversation. On today's show, KTOO's Tasha Elizarde is here with another segment of Chef's Holo Holo Talk featuring the co-owners of Zerelda's Bistro. Juno is Pride Month, and starting Friday, it's Pride Week in Juno. Emily from Sigla will be here to give us the rundown of all the events. And a four-year voyage across the world starts in Juno this month. The Polynesian Voyaging Society will take the Hokulea, a twin-hulled wind-powered canoe over 40,000 miles around the globe. Those conversations, savory moments, sounds wild, music, and more coming up right here on A Juno Afternoon.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta ka na khaya ha an ka gnil cheesh.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. Hey everyone, my name is Tasha Elizarde and welcome to Chef's Holo Holo Talk, where I sit down with your favorite Juno chefs to learn about their unique mix of personal heritage and cooking. So today we are with the co-founders of Zerelda's Bistro and I am super excited. So we're going to start off with some introductions. So for both of y'all, could you introduce your name and what your work at Zerelda's usually looks like in a given day and your favorite thing about cooking? We'll start with Abby, since she is a returning guest.
Hi, y'all. My name is Abby Barnett, and I'm co-owner of Zerelda's Bistro. I cook and bake and manage people and run around and do all kinds of things all day long and answer questions and provide a support system for our staff every day. And that's what I do. It's a lot of stuff, but you know.
Jeremy Barnett, I'm the other co-owner. And normally my day starts out with starting up the barbecue. Seeing what meats need to be cooked off, and just going from there with my prep list and, cooking, you know, the pho and go from there.
And line cooking.
Oh, and the line cooking. Yeah. Or whatever station needs filled, you know, with, my presence.
Mm-hmm. I extra love this cause I noticed you're wearing a barbecue t-shirt right now. Do you have a story behind this, you know, this cute little pig on top of the barbecue?
Oh, I'm all about pork. I love pork. It's like from ribs to pork butt to bacon. It's just this. When I started, I cooked, you know, started cooking pork. And it was like this very forgiving meat. So I was like, I love you. You're my favorite. I made so many errors, but you still love me back and you came out yummy. So I got to love that.
I can't help but notice, like, Abby, you're just like, I love you.
He has a lot of barbecue t-shirts, by the way. He is an aficionado of barbecue t-shirts.
Do you have a t-shirt of you, your face on the t-shirt? Because
no.
I feel like there's the competition here between like wife and barbecue.
No, yeah, no, we're all good.
Socks. Yeah, socks, maybe. No.
Socks. Some socks with just your face on them.
He would like that.
Well, now you got a new idea for a Christmas gift.
I know.
So. Well, awesome. Thanks for introducing yourselves. And I kind of want to jump right in because right before this, you were telling me about how this is the first interview or one of the first interviews you've done just with you two. Yep. So I want to jump into the story behind Zerelda's. I think before we get into, like, because I know a little bit about your story just from reading up online and hearing from other folks. So I know that you two work together, but I want to start from the very beginning. How did Zereldas begin, Abby?
Sure. So prior to Zereldas, I had a catering company, and then I moved on from that and decided I wanted to open a little bistro in the Valley. And at around the same time, maybe 6 months prior, I had met Jeremy, and we actually met online, and we
mean like classic dating apps,
like
style?
Twitter. Yeah. And he had a food truck, and then I was just like posting pictures of like cake and stuff, and we started like Twittering each other and talking about our love of food, and I'd be like, wow, that's a really cool sandwich. And that's how, and then he moved here, and then he came and visited me from Pennsylvania, and I was really kind of struggling trying to like put Zereldas together. I had purchased the Paradise Cafe in the Valley, which had been there, and I was really struggling and trying to figure out what direction to go. And I met Jeremy, and he came down, and I showed him everything, and he was like super excited. We also fell in love. We were like, really, like, it was like this really fresh start for both of us and our relationship. And we clicked, and we just loved cooking together. And I was like, we were like cooking, you know, getting to know each other, trying to impress each other with our food. And, oh yeah, look what I can do.
Did y'all get into any like mutual food competitions? Did any of that happen?
There was a little like, oh, well, I'm going to make this.
Yeah. Like, for the longest time, like, anybody who knows me, I don't eat vegetables. But I was impressing her with, like, oh, look what I made. You know, I made this vegetable dish for you and blah, blah, blah. And I ate it. And all of a sudden, she's like, yeah, I thought you liked vegetables. I was like, no, I was just trying to impress you. That's all. I was like, I hate vegetables.
I eat pork.
When did that facade drop? Like,
oh, after a month.
A month? A month. Yeah. So it wasn't even like a year.
I was like, this ain't me. I was just trying to impress you.
Yeah. So anyway, we started like cooking together, and then he decided he wanted to move here and do this and help me. And I was like, it was just like, I don't know. It was like we just clicked in the kitchen. We clicked in the business, and he came and we just pulled it all together. We had a really rough first opening day because I had never like officially, you know, like done a restaurant on my own in all my food career. And so we did it. We opened Zereldas, and it just started from there. And Zereldas, for those of you who don't know, is named after my grandma, and she's from Texas. It's a tribute to her, and she just embodies love, food, and family. So that's how it came about. And then we did the other location for almost 6 years, and then we moved to our new Valley location. So, and we just keep going from there.
Right. That old location, too. It used to be, because I actually...
Now it's the Grind. Yeah.
That was the Grind. Okay.
Now it's the Grind.
And it's, isn't it like a house?
Yeah.
Kind
yeah.
of? Yeah.
It's like an old house.
We had guests come in and be like, oh, my grandparents used to live here. I'm like, what? Oh, you know, yeah, it was so cool to hear stories from the past of people.
We love that little place. It was a little old-fashioned house that embodied what we were doing, but we just grew out of it. We were doing so much production, and we had to like rent out another location for storage, and it just became too much. And then COVID hit, and then things changed.
Right.
And we had to make business decisions after that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I still feel like your current location still feels pretty homey.
Yeah.
Like with the, what I have been really appreciating is that you still do the to-go boxes, but it still feels very comfortable. It doesn't feel like, you know, you're just taking stuff and then leaving unless you have to. It still feels pretty comfortable.
And we have indoor seating. And by the way, everyone, we have outdoor seating, and it's nice today. So you should come by.
A little shameless advertisement. There you go. No, it's true, though. When it's warm and sunny here, you have to commit. Yeah. I was like not wearing a jacket earlier. Like, yeah, this is a good life.
Yeah.
So I want to get into more about how you two like connected businesses, because my understanding too is, Jeremy, so you had a barbecue business before you came up to Juno. Could you tell me a little bit about that and your decision to come up to Juno?
I was doing this barbecue food truck in Pennsylvania, and like I told, like Abby said, you know, we're tweeting, and, you know, I was promoting my own business. And this truck is like so old. I'm like, am I even going to make it to my location today? You know, I'm like, oh, it's sputtering. I'm going to have gas.
You Wait, know, so you like were, because I don't actually know a lot about food truck businesses. So you were literally just driving around with your stuff.
Going where I can. I found a location. But after a while, it didn't work out. And, you know, me and Abby started talking more and more. I'm like, you know, I need something new. You know, so I was like, Grandpa, I was like, here's a food truck you bought. You know, so I parked it in his lawn. It's probably a flower bed now. And I know it's still there. So I was like, you know, I came to visit Abby. I was like, hey, I barbecue. She's like, I love barbecue. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm like, I love this and this kind of food. She's like, I do too. So you know, I visited for a month, came back on, I left April 1st. And came back 12 days later with all my stuff. And
it was a long time ago.
I jumped on board. Yeah, it was like eight years ago. Yeah, it was like 9 years ago. And I told Abby, I was like, let's do this. I was like, let me help you.
Yeah.
And we just connected in every way. I was like, I'm on board for you with this.
We were just like at a point in our life where we just were struggling and needing direction and like meeting each other. We found that inspiration in each other and that like business partner also, as well as like falling in love. And that's really like how it all came together.
That's so sweet. Yeah. Just like, I'm not gonna lie. The first time I read about this, I was like, this is so adorable. It's why I really wanted to ask y'all about that today. And I think it's so cool. Side note. So would it be possible to find these tweets? Still, are they still out there in the online world?
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
I haven't even looked on Twitter in like years.
Yeah.
Years. Probably like 6 years.
It's so
I gave mine up after 8.
Oh.
After you.
Whoa.
There ain't no point tweeting.
Yeah, you're like, there's no point in tweeting anymore because I found the one. Like,
exactly.
We're good.
Twitter's kind of fun, but whatever, you know. Yeah. And that's how it came about. Yeah. And he has a lot of restaurant experience before his food truck. So he's like classically trained, and he's worked at a lot of different restaurants. And he worked at. And just so you know, in Hawaii. So a lot of our food has a lot of Hawaiian influence.
I was going to ask.
So it's my family lives in Hawaii, and he lived in Hawaii while he was in the military for how long?
Until I got out for about 5 years.
Yeah.
Then after that, I found food.
Yeah.
So I started working at Roy's in Waikiki.
Yeah.
On my days off, I was, you know, always in Chinatown. Like, oh, what's this? What's this? Just, you know, gradually, like, just, you know, exploring food, trying things, and just began falling in love more and more.
And that's why a lot of our food has Hawaiian influence in it, just so our customers know.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it's like, I want to say it's the only restaurant where you can really, like, find poke or, like, at least last time I was there, I just remember looking at the menu and being like, wow, there's such a cool range of different types of food that the only place I could really think about finding that stuff is if I was in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And so I think that's insanely cool.
Yeah. We love Hawaii. Like tonight, tell them what your dinner special is.
Ooh, dinner special. Yeah. Wait, what was it? Sorry.
Loka moco.
Describe it.
Yep. So the beef patty on top of rice, smothered in gravy, kimchi salad. Can't beat that.
Some local beans, sprouts, sesame seeds.
Heck yeah.
But we use like good beef. It's like a brisket short rib blend. And so
nice. And fried eggs. And did y'all work together to make that dish, or was that primarily you in the kitchen? Or
Mostly it's me, actually. Like a lot of it, like the heavy Hawaiian influence, or when you see the barbecue, it's like Oh, yeah. You know, and I'll run by Abby, like, hey, what do you think? Because, you know, she's my business partner mm-hmm. and my wife, and I want her opinion yeah. on it. And as long as you're like, oh, you know, she'll give me an idea of add this or do this. And it's like, okay, there yeah. we go. And we come together and make it work.
Yeah. That's how our specials are. I'm like, hey, we need blah, 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 blah. And I like this ingredient. And then he's like, well, I got this. And then that's kind of how it comes together. So
I love that.
You know, second pair of eyes is mm-hmm. what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. You know, respecting her opinion. And yeah. what do you think?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's kind of like an interesting collaboration process, too, is like you got someone who's pitching it and then someone else who's like making something and then you're both reviewing each other's.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, basically. Yeah. So.
Yeah, because we're kind of funny. Like he'll be like, what do you think of this? And I'll be like, well, I don't think it should be chopped that way. I think it should be cut that way. Like we had this, we just put a brisket banh mi on our menu and we had this long discussion about how the brisket should be prepared and cut. And we ended up doing chopped brisket because it's easier to eat.
She won.
What did you think? Yeah.
I wanted sliced. She wanted chopped. I'm like, well.
But won you over about that argument? What made you be like, oh, I guess we'll do that instead?
I don't have all day to debate with her. Oh, she can go all day. I don't have all day.
Hey, honestly, that's impressive, though. That's impressive.
Yep.
So I wanted to talk a little bit more about, you know, that influence, too. So we're talking about the Hawaii influence. I know mm-hmm. we touched base, too, on a little bit about the Southern influence, too. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if there's anything else that y'all feel like really influences the type of food that you make, really comes out when you're trying to make, like, something new.
With me,
they're Southern.
Like, I was born in South Carolina. So what I'll do is, you know, take influences of that. Then I'll take places that I've been that really matter to me, like South Carolina, California, with the tacos, the Mexican food that we do, and Hawaii. And I'll focus on one thing for the longest time. Then I'll move my focus to another thing. And when I'm done, it's like this full circle of bringing that all together. With the food, like it's a little Southern, you got a little Mexican, you got a little Asian or Hawaiian, whatever you want to do. And it's beautiful, actually. Yeah. But I'll shift, you know, I'll just focus on it in one time. And she's like, oh, what's this phase now? I'm like, it's not a phase. It's me being me. I was like, don't worry about it. I'm just being me. Then it comes together and this is what I'm creating. This yeah. is what I want to put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah. Do you ever find it difficult to try to engage like so many different types of ingredients or?
I've always felt like the more you add, the more you take away. So it's like less is more and just focus really hardcore on the flavor and you'll get it with that little amount that you put into it. As long as those flavors are like, oh, boom. Wow. That's amazing. Like put it all together. You'll get it.
But I'm Filipino and we are all about sour, salty, bitter, sweet, and then he likes the spicy. So I'm always like, I think that sauce needs more acid. So we'll put some more lime juice or I think it needs, and I'm really into texture too. And so that's where I inject my opinions and that's kind of like how we collaborate. And I'm like, I always like crave that, like, you know, the fish sauce or like the sour of the vinegar or something. And that's, you know. And he really likes spicy, so we kind of, that's how we sort of balance that out. And so that's how the influence of my upbringing and the food that I grew up eating, you know, like I ate a lot of like salty, sour kind of things. And so that's how we sort of work together. Yeah.
I kind of like that because it's like one thing that I notice when I go to y'all's restaurant is just there's always so many different flavors going on, but it's not in a way that I feel overwhelmed. It's like I really like it. And there is this sense of familiarity for me as like someone who is tasting that sourness that I grew up with in a Filipino family, too. It's like there's that. But then I spent a short amount of time in Hawaii as well, so I'm also familiar with all those different things going on. And even though I'm not familiar with the South, I'm still like, this is delicious.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the thing about the South. It's just delicious. It's comforting, and it's like fatty, and it's rich. And that's the great thing about mixing the Southern with like Asian flavors is like you can take that richness and then balance it out with like a tangy veggie slaw and a spicy limey sriracha aioli or something, and that's how it all kind of comes together. So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I like how it balances out, because for me sometimes I'll eat something and I'm just like, that's too heavy or like whatever, but then having that other thing really helps balance that out. And so I wanted to talk to you about, like, you know, we were talking about barbecue earlier. And then I know when Abby and I were talking a couple months back, we were like, whoa, it's summer, which means it's barbecue season, which is exciting. So we got to have y'all here. So could you just like tell me a little bit about what the barbecue process looks like at Serelda's?
Pretty much the way I base it off of is, what dish do I want to make? And I'll go from there. Either, you know, normally the rubs will be like salt and pepper, you know, and take the meat, salt and pepper it, and I'll start splitting wood. I use mesquite. You know, some people are afraid of it, like, oh, it's too, you know, strong, it's too smoky. It's like, you know, your preference is your preference. And mine is mesquite because I know what I'm looking for when I barbecue the meat. And that's what I'm getting when I put it into the dish. So I'll either trim up the meat or season it. And it'll take me about 45 minutes to an hour to get the smoker going to about 225. And I use this big water smoker, Myra Mixon, and I love it. It's this beast of a smoker. I can load it up with all the barbecue, you know, with that I need for the day.
And then, what's the difference with the water smoker versus like a normal smoker?
Keeps it moist.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, if you don't have a water smoker, you can always just, you'll have to continually spritz it with, you know, vinegar, water, whatever your choice is. I use apple cider vinegar, and that's it. So I'll get the meat on the smoker, and depending, like, say a brisket. That normally takes me 12 to 14 hours, run at 225, 250, and pork butt, 8 to 9 hours, maybe. You know, it's for being an impatient person that I am, I love food that takes a long time to cook. It's a labor of love. It's that change, that process that you get to see while you barbecue, like, oh, there's this. Oh, my bark is forming now. Okay, nice. Mm-hmm. You know, where am I at with the field? Like, okay, now it's time to wrap it. And that's just part through the day. And I wrap it around probably like 7 hours in. Keep it moist, keep the bark beautiful. And after that, it'll take another 3 to 4 hours to finish. And that's it. So.
And I do want to point out, we do traditional barbecue. It's not, it's old school barbecue. It's not, there's no electricity involved. Every single thing is like.
Cooking with wood.
Cooking with wood and charcoal, or just wood?
Just wood.
Just wood. Yep. Yeah. So like, it's a big difference in flavor versus.
Like when I barbecue, I'll think about, what am I making? Like, am I going to go Asian this day, or am I going to do Mexican? Like with the brisket for the banh mi, I start rubbing it down with fish sauce. Actually, then I'll season it as a binder, and it's really beautiful. Actually, I was like, "Wow, this is awesome!" Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, "Fish sauce," and I was like, "It worked."
Yeah, and I
loved it.
That is really cool, because I've never thought about combining fish sauce with barbecue before. It's just not something.
I mean,
think
a lot
of
people use it as a binder. Like, you know, I'll use mustard most of the time for a binder. To rub across the meat, a thin layer, season it up, and it was my seasoning will hold. So, but this time I was like, why don't I try fish sauce? And it worked.
And we put the barbecue in several things. Like, it's in burritos, it's on fries, it's on like many different things. So, and we do barbecue specials all throughout the week too. So, Got like that we had Huli Huli chicken sandwich last night. That was really
Wait,
good.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that thing.
No. I'll do it again.
We do we do smoked pork belly bao buns. Like, people really like that.
That's oh, my
really
God. I'm like having a moment here. I'm like, I need to go. I did want to ask one more thing before we go. And I just was curious if y'all have any like funny barbecue or kitchen stories together. I just really want to hear something. Like,
Harold, do two really short stories.
Okay, real quick.
The really funny story is one winter our ceiling exploded.
What?
Because the pipes froze at our old place and they exploded and we were slammed. They're like, the whole restaurant was like packed and full and the water's pouring everywhere. And I'm like in the kitchen, oh no, we got to get all this food out. And I'm like, baby, come on, help me cook. And I'm like frantically cooking. The lights are like going black and flickering.
Lights are flickering. And there's water pouring out where they deliver the food from.
And I wouldn't stop cooking. I couldn't physically stop cooking. And finally, he like gets me.
She didn't get it. She didn't understand.
He's like, stop cooking. They have to go home. We're gonna leave.
Yeah, I was gonna say what?
And it's like flooding.
It's like a waterfall.
And I'm frantically in front of the stove, like cooking. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, I'm shocked that y'all were even able to stay open for any much longer. I'd be like, we're done.
Oh, it was 5 minutes and shut down. But she didn't understand
when
it.
When you're a cook, it's like the battleground. You just cook until, you know.
I just want to feed people.
You're like warriors in the kitchen. Okay. Like how we are. Yeah. And then tell them your funny barbecue.
So last day we were at the old location. I was like, I want to do a whole hog, and I want to do it old school Southern style. So I built my brick pit, got the rebar, got the chicken wire, everything. She is not thinking how much work it's going to take. I left at 2 a.m., and we had a notorious bear that used to wander around
big
all that.
Big bear.
Used to tear up the fence and everything, if you remember the old location. And all of a sudden, I roll up at 2 a.m. I'm like looking around. I'm like, okay, no bear. So I start my fire in this old offset cooker I had, and it's like full of grease, lots of grease from old barbecue. So I'm like, okay, I need a burn barrel. So I start burning wood in this old cooker, and I have this big old mountain of smoke coming out. Fire department's rolling by. I'm like waving at them. I'm like, hey, it's just me. It's cool. You know, everything's under control. Looking for the bear, trying to cook a pig, and it's like, finally, service comes around, and I'm just like, oh, man, I'm so tired. And this one piece of the pork, of the pig, was being so stubborn. I was like, just take the leg off and throw it in the oven. I was like, I'm done. It's like 5 p.m., and we're still going through service. So I was like, okay, but it was awesome, though. Looking for the bear. Fire department rolling by.
Yeah, that good bear, times. I'm surprised that bear didn't attack him.
Yeah,
literally attacked our garbage cans, our dumpsters. It was so
ripped open the
crazy.
Fence.
Oh, he God, ripped yeah. our it's entire
scary.
Fence.
I haven't had him on
He's lucky
cam.
that bear didn't take that pig away.
Yeah, I almost thought the punchline was going to be that the bear took the leg or something. Because I would be like, oh.
No, I was making all that noise all throughout the night out of fear.
Oh, God.
Yeah, oh, I was so scared. I was like, man, I ain't got no weapons.
Yeah, between that and
the
smoke.
I got no bear spray.
Lots going on there. That's hilarious, though. Well, this was such a fun conversation. I love y'all's chemistry. This was so fun. So I just want to say thank you, Abby
thank you.
And Jeremy, for
thank
being
you so
Thank you
much
very much.
For having us. Yeah. And happy Pride Month, everyone.
Ooh, yes. Happy Pride. Happy, thank like, y'all. Official beginning of the summer, too.
I know,
truly.
It's so great.
Yeah. There's so many tourists out there right now. Now it's crazy. But yeah, thank you for joining us
thank
today.
You. Thanks, Boston.
And then thank you to our listeners too for listening. And then I'm gonna pass it off to Boston. And again, I'm Tasha, and I'm wishing you all a great rest of your afternoon and an even greater next meal.
Coming up next, Sigla and some Pride Week events next week and all month long. But first, let's have a savory moment in honor of cooking.
Step in to the savory moment. Scallops, sweet, juicy, and laced with a crispy golden crust. How do restaurant chefs do it? It's called the Maillard reaction. Chemical changes in sugars and proteins that result in hundreds of new and enticing flavor, aroma, and color molecules. Think browning bread, seared meat, and roasted vegetables. The Maillard reaction is definitely something you should try at home with some of your own scallops. First, blot your scallops dry. If the meat is moist, surface temperatures can only reach 212 degrees, the boiling point of water, instead of the 310 degrees needed to trigger browning. Second, sear your scallops in oil, which can reach temperatures of up to 400 degrees without burning, unlike butter, which begins to smoke at about half that temperature. If you want some buttery flavor, and who doesn't, sizzle a knob in the skillet, maybe with some sage or thyme, and baste the scallops after the Maillard reaction has occurred. Next, don't crowd the pan. Sear your scallops a few at a time, allowing plenty of room for moisture to escape. Finally, give your scallops some time to brown, about 1 to 2 minutes per side. Uninterrupted contact with the hot pan is essential. What to serve with those lacy golden scallops? Tap the Maillard reaction again by treating cubes of butternut squash, apple slices, and quartered Brussels sprouts to a 400-degree oven until they're enticingly brown and fragrant. Place the scallops on top, drizzle with buttery, herbaceous pan juices, and you've got dinner. Find the full recipe for Mr. Maillard's golden scallops with roasted squash and apples at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. June is Pride Month all around the globe, and in Juno, there is an extra special Pride Week, which kicks off this Friday. Here to preview all the event goodness is Emily Mesh from Sigla. Welcome, Gunath Cheesh, for being here today. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Well, first off, give us a quick overview of Sigla and its programs, just for those who may not be aware.
Sure. Sigla is a community organization. We are Southeast Alaska's largest LGBTQ organization. And the main thing we do every year is spearheading Pride Week. But throughout the year, we also have events. We try to do two or three things every month to create community among the LGBT population of Juneau and Southeast Alaska.
That's awesome. Now, will you share, I mean, I always think of it as a strange thing because there's, we have months for things to recognize stuff, and I think we can be doing it all the time, but we definitely highlight different things in different months throughout the year. What is the significance of Pride Month?
Well, I think it means different things to different people. For me, it's about visibility and sort of in two different ways, visibility. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, there's a lot of people out there that kind of wish we didn't exist. Mm. And Pride Month is an excuse to, not an excuse, but a reason for people who are normally just in their lives to come out and say, listen, this is a part of who I am. We're all a part of every thread in the fabric of society. No matter how uncomfortable that makes you, we can't go away. We're not going to go away. We're everywhere.
Yeah.
That sounded more threatening than I meant it to.
but it really, it sort of gives voice and power and empowers those who maybe historically who haven't had it, right?
Right. And yeah. that's the other side is it's visibility for the people who are maybe part of our community but haven't made that public yet. Mm. To let them know, listen, you have a support network out there. If you come out and maybe friends or family aren't as supportive as you would like, we're here. We're going to welcome you with open arms.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's always at the end of the day, we're all human beings. Yeah. And it's really our lives should be filled with love and joy in whatever way that makes us happy. And to share that with others and to celebrate that with others, I think that's a really powerful thing. And I think that's one of the things that highlighting specific events throughout the year and specifically in June Pride. Yeah. And like you said, it does mean different things to different people because there's a lot of cultures within the LGBTQ community.
Right.
And the plus and the 2S and the, all the things, all the letters that we need to put in there because there's extra, there's all things that need to be recognized, right?
Absolutely.
So to me, it's a really wonderful month to sort of highlight all of that and really make aware for people who may not even be participating in it that it's happening, right? Like you said, I think that's really great. Now, I do want to ask, who designed this year's logo? Because you sent it to me and it's beautiful. So I have my favorite color in it, which is purple, and the mountains are like purple, and then it's really nice. Who did it this year?
Hero Dawson designed the logo this year.
Okay.
I also I love it.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. I mean, Chloe's last year was awesome, and this is even more. This is just, it's also awesome, and it's a different take on the logo situation, but it's very colorful, and I just, purple always warms my heart. So any shade of purple, really, lavender, any color is going to be good for me. Okay, so the events, let's get to the events.
Okay.
I know we're kicking off this Friday with a drag show at the Alaskan, right?
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that. Is that Juno Drag doing that?
Juno Drag is doing that.
Okay.
Normally, we'd be kicking off with a much larger Glitz drag show, but unfortunately, with Centennial Hall renovations, we don't have the venue space.
So. And that's a good time to mention. It's going to happen in September, right?
It will happen, yeah. Once renovations are over, we will be having a Glitz show just like every year, just later in the year.
Yeah.
But because of that, for Pride, we're kicking off with a smaller drag show at the Alaskan. Juno Drag are fantastic people. I just spent the weekend in Skagway with them. They did a performance for Skagway's Pride weekend. Great people, and they deserve support.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's at 6 o'clock, June 9th. That's this Friday at the Alaskan. Okay. And then on Sunday, I think, there's a downtown scavenger hunt. What's that all about?
Well, it's so there's it, basically there's going to be clues in different businesses around downtown, and you go to one of the businesses, you get the clue, and you have to figure out where to go next.
Oh, I see. Okay, mm-hmm. Okay, that's kind of fun. And that is it. It's within the downtown confines, I bet.
Yeah. It's because everybody's going to be on foot. We don't want people to get into their cars and go in different parts of town.
So it's all going to be places
where you can walk to within a reasonable distance.
Yeah. Are there other things happening throughout the weekend as well?
We're doing a Pride hike once a week throughout the month of June.
Okay. Is that happening on Saturday then?
I believe the Pride hike is on Saturday.
Okay. Yeah, and I know there's also, there's going to be screenings at Goldtown too. You could probably check their website and see, because they're probably going to be screening things all throughout the month, right? Different movies.
Right.
Different, probably current movies as well as historical movies. I haven't seen the schedule, but I'm sure Colette's doing an awesome job of programming that for the month.
Yeah, it always finds movies I've never heard of, but are amazing.
Yeah, that's true. And then this one is really fun. So I think this is going to be, if my date is right, is that Wednesday is the Proud Pet Parade?
Yeah, down Sandy Beach. Yeah. That was, we I think it was a new idea last year, and it was just so successful that we had to do it again. People just bring their animals, whatever, it's a dog, cat, bring a goldfish. If you want to like paint a rainbow on the aquarium and bring the goldfish down there.
An iguana, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. A chameleon.
Chameleon. Just like get it to change
colors.
Get it
to do its thing. And be Pride colors for the day. That would be really fun. And that happens at Sandy Beach. Mm-hmm. And that's happening a little bit later in the day because that is a work day, I believe, right? So June 13th at 6:30 p.m. And then a couple days later on the 15th, which I think is – so wait, the 13th is – what day is the 13th?
I'm trying to see. The 16th is the Fridays.
Yeah. 13th is Tuesday. Okay. So we're getting our dates right here. I want to make sure. So the 13th is Tuesday, and that's at 6:30 p.m. That's the Proud Pet Parade. That sounds like there'll be a great picture opportunity there for – I'm sure your Instagram will be full of various different pictures from that day, right?
The person who runs our Instagram is spearheading this particular event.
So oh.
I'm hoping there will be a lot of pictures.
I'm imagining that there will be a ton of pictures then for sure. Okay. And then we have Pride Trivia at Louie's in Douglas. And that's going to be on Thursday night, the 15th. And that's at 7 p.m. What happens at Trivia?
It's pub trivia. We have a host that has a bunch of questions. Probably be split up into teams and answer questions about Pride history. And
people win prizes and stuff?
I believe they're getting prizes, yeah.
Yeah. And what, do you know any of the category? I don't know who puts that together, but do you know any of the categories?
I'm not involved with that, like organizing that event, so I can't tell you. But
what do you hope there will be? What's your area of expertise that you can answer trivia on?
Oh, geez. Okay, this is super specific and super weird. But last year, there were two separate questions on Donna International, who is an Israeli singer who won Eurovision.
Oh.
And I think the first trans artist to win Eurovision. In 1998, she won Eurovision.
Oh, wow.
And there were two different questions on Donna International. And, like, I lived in Israel for 10 years. So, like, I immediately knew the answers. And I feel like nobody else in the building did.
You got that little warm feeling inside where you're like, I know that one. This is mine. I love that when the actual trivia question comes along that I actually know the answer to. That's really fun. So that's trivia on Thursday night. And then this is really fun. The prom, which is a big event, right? Yeah. Right in the middle of the month, basically. Friday night, the 16th, mm-hmm. 7 p.m. It'll be just across the street here from KTO at the Jack. Tell us about the prom.
Well, it's for anybody who didn't feel like they could experience prom properly when they were in high school.
Mm.
If they couldn't bring who they wanted to or they didn't feel comfortable attending. That's what this is for. It's for all ages, but it's to sort of recreate the high school prom experience, but with a lot more inclusiveness.
Right, right.
So there's going to be music. There's going to be, well, I was going to say a DJ, but the DJ brings the music.
For sure. So get your best outfits put together, your best fits, as the kids say.
Yeah.
Get your best fits on for prom and do that Friday night at the Jack. And no spiked punch, though, I hope.
No.
No. Because is there an age requirement for the prom or anything?
No, it's all ages. I don't believe we're going to have alcohol this year.
Okay. And is that a ticketed event? Do you have to buy a ticket for that?
No, I think that's open.
Okay. And I know we're going to give the website for where you can find out all the events here. Let me give that now before we get to the last couple events. Facebook.com/SEAGLA LGBTQ/events. So that's SEAGLA LGBTQ/events. And I'll link that on the show notes for this page today on the website, as well as you can follow Instagram.com/the_SEAGLA, SEAGLA. So that's where you can find out and follow along with some of these events that are happening. The prom is next Friday night. That sounds really fun. And then on the following night, if you haven't had too much fun on Friday night, then there's the pub crawl downtown. Is it going to be just downtown?
Just downtown, again.
So no buses needed to be involved there. You're just going to hop from bar to bar.
Yeah.
And so I'm assuming that's a 21 and up event.
That one is 21 and up.
Yeah, okay. And the other events that we already mentioned, like the Proud Pet Parade, the pub trivia at Louise is probably 21 and up because people have to be above age to get in. The drag show, I believe, is open to any age on, well, it's the Alaskan too. Is that to be 21 and up then? Or is that an all ages show? Because sometimes these events, you know, you can get in even if you are underage, depending upon the event. Like they may not serve alcohol during the event. So you have to check, right?
That's something you can check at junodrag.com.
Okay, junodrag.com for all the information there. So the pub crawl, which bar, do you know which bars you're going to be going to or just all of them?
You're asking me tough questions. I don't drink, so.
will you be going to the pub crawl though or no? Just to hang out?
I might be tagging along, but.
Right. I'm not much of a drinker myself either, so I don't know all the hot spots.
Yeah, I think we're just going up like Front Street in Franklin, just all
over
the main.
Okay, just all around.
Yeah.
And then on Sunday, this sounds really fun, the annual Pride Picnic at Sandy Beach, right?
Yeah, that's always our bookend for Pride Week.
Yeah.
It's an all-ages event. It's barbecue. We're going to be giving out the Mildred Besser Award for this year.
Nice.
In recognition of somebody who has done a lot of work for the LGBTQ community in June this year. And it's just everybody getting together and having a good time. And it's at noon. So if you went to the pub crawl, it's enough time to sleep off your hangover.
Yeah. For sure, at noon. Yeah, the annual Pride Picnic at Sandy Beach. There's a lot of events. Now, Pride Month isn't just this one week. It's the whole month of June. And there are events all over town. Like we said, there's screenings at the Gold Town. And there's a weekly Pride hike on various trails around town. Where do we find out information about the Pride hikes?
You can find it at our Facebook page on all the events tab. It'll have all of the events.
Oh, great. Okay. Okay.
And there will be posts both on Facebook and on Instagram periodically with reminders of, oh, this event is coming up. This is where it's going to be.
I see. Okay. Awesome. Well, Emily, thank you for joining me today and giving us a little preview of the events. Again, going to the Chiefs for being here. More details, again, can be found under the events tab on Sigla's Facebook page, which is facebook.com/SiglaLGBTQ/events, and follow their Instagram at instagram.com/the_Sigla. Thank you so much, Emily.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTO. Up next, KTO's Yvonne Crumry's interview about the Hokulea canoe landing this Saturday. But first, a little Sounds Wild.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
On an overcast July day, four biologists are skiffing across the waters of Sumner Strait near Wrangell in southeast Alaska. The dark gray backs of harbor porpoises break the water ahead of the skiff, rolling gently as they surface for air. Harbor porpoises are the smallest of Alaska's cetaceans, and they're pretty common in the inside waters of southeast Alaska and the Aleutians. These biologists are identifying the distinct populations, or stocks, of harbor porpoises in southeast waters. A stock is a distinct group of animals within a larger population, a group that interbreeds and interacts, and is genetically identifiable from other groups of the same species. Biologists are looking at porpoises in the Sumner Strait area around Wrangell, as well as those around Icy Strait and Glacier Bay, about 200 miles northwest. Genetic tests reveal the relatedness between individuals. But how do you get a DNA sample from a fast-swimming, skittish marine mammal like a harbor porpoise? Biologists collect fluke prints, a sample of water scooped up from the surface immediately after the porpoise surfaces for a quick breath of air. The water is quickly filtered, and a tiny amount of skin shed by the porpoise is collected. It's enough to provide a sample of environmental DNA, which biologists can match to the specific stock of animals. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Glenadee have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. A four-year voyage across the world starts in Juno this month. The Polynesian Voyaging Society will take the Hokulea, a double-hulled, wind-powered canoe, a wind-powered canoe that was carved 50 years ago and has embarked on 14 voyages since, over 40,000 miles around the globe. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry spoke with Nainoa Thompson, president of the Polynesian Voyaging Society. He first came to Alaska looking for logs suitable for a voyaging canoe. After a painful search in Hawaii, came up empty.
We searched for 9.5 months. And let's see. We found trees big enough for the size that we needed to build the hulls of this canoe from our forest, but none of them were healthy enough. So what we found in our forest was a really sad story that we can't build a single canoe today. That 90% of our koa forest, the koa is the traditional preferred wood, hardwood in Hawaii's forest. 90% has been cut down and much of it's been replaced by cattle. So 9.5 months, we couldn't find these trees. We couldn't find it. And it was like the first voyage that we took that we didn't find our destination. And it was very painful to us. Hoover, when he visited the Hawaiian Islands, wrote in his logbook that he measured a canoe that was 108 feet long on the island of Kauai. And it was twice the length of our canoe, Hokulea. And it was made out of, in his writing, made out of the finest pine. Pine is not native to the Hawaiian Islands. And so when he asked the chief where the trees come from, he said, they came from the gifts of the gods. They were driftwood logs. And we suspect these trees would have to be because it was a pine from the Pacific Northwest. And then how I got involved was a single phone call from one of our elders that had a great friendship with one of the Tlingit elders in Southeast Alaska. His name is Judson Brown. And he just said, okay, we will get you your trees to build your canoe to carry your culture, but you need to talk to this man, to Byron Malott, who was the CEO of Sea Alaska. And on that phone call, I wasn't there, but I was told that Byron basically said, okay, we'll give you the trees. And, but he had three conditions. And one was, you know, don't ever ask us how much it costs and it's not a gift. And he said, don't ever bring these trees back. Once we give it to you, you are responsible for those trees. And his third comment was that we're not giving you trees and just wood. We're giving the children, our children, that our relationship over 12,000 years in Alaska is about making sure the things of the forest and the oceans are family, so we take care of them. That was a profoundly important statement as to why we're there now. It's about celebration of family. Ernie Hillman took a tape measure out and measured the tree and said, look, this tree, we found it for you. This is your specifications. This is what you wanted. And he was stern with me and strict. And I really appreciated that. And he says, shall we cut it down? And I told him no. And so he got more quiet. I did too. I flew back home to the board of directors in Honolulu. And this is the difference. Yeah. The board of directors get their monthly pamphlets and all they see is a project and wood. But what we saw was what I saw was the difference between what's wild and what's full of life, and what's still free and powerful of the Alaskan forest compared to the depression of ours. And I just couldn't cut the trees down. The ability to take the trees required that Alaskans and Hawaiians and people in Hawaii come together and they start replanting our forests. So the Alaskans came to Hawaii and for one weekend, we planted 18,000 koa trees, fenced it off to keep the pigs and the cattle out. And that forest, it's just a promise, right? We made a promise.
One question I had that stood out to me from things I've read so far about the trip up to Yakutat is that it was the first time they welcomed a yak or a canoe in 100 years. And I think this voyage sits at this really interesting moment in Southeast Alaska, or Tlingit. People are starting to have these experiences and moments that they're building and working towards that they haven't had in 100 years. So can I ask, like, why start from Juneau? Why go up to Yakutat before this journey?
We view, and Alaskan view, that the oceans is what connects us and that we're all Pacific Oceans people and we are family of the ocean and that we are family with each other. I want to come to Alaska. I want to capture their stories. I want them to tell us about their genealogy of 12,000 years and how they figured out all the things that we can't in modern day, like sustainability and balance and so forth. How did they do that? Because the evidence is that their country, Alaska, is in relative terms compared to a place like Hawaii, extraordinarily healthy. I look in Alaska, all I see is life, where I don't in Hawaii anymore. So, in our opinion, Alaska is an extraordinary school.
What's unique about the Hokulea?
She doesn't have any motors, that's for sure. But she would be the first canoe that was constructed of best guess. There are no blueprints left anymore. Enormous amount of research back in the early 70s to come up with a design of what the voyaging canoes might have been looked like. And so she's a unique design. She's powered by the wind solely. We have no engines. And what's most unique about this canoe, it carries the students of the earth. And what it does, it allows us to go into nature and try to find our way by just being a part of nature. They found a man by the name of, his name is Pialut, but his nickname is Mao. Mao means to be fierce. So make a long story short, he came to Hawaii, agreed to sail in Hokulea with a crew he's never met and go on a voyage six times longer than any voyage he's ever taken. And on a canoe, it was eight times bigger. And it would cross the equator where he'd see southern stars that he's never seen before. And he's going to find that island by using nature. And he did. 31 days later from leaving Honolulu Bay, Maui on May 1st, 1976, 31 days later, they arrived in Papeete, Tahiti. Miracle. But why is Hokulea so unique? Because it carried the master, Mao, found Tahiti and changed the Pacific world. Navigation, voyaging is taught all over the Pacific now because of that man. I mean, Bon, you know, we didn't know anything. We didn't know how to sit. We didn't know how to stand. We didn't know how to look. We didn't know how to sleep. You know, we didn't know anything, nothing. And so all we did for 25 years was watch him and talk to him and be with him. And he told me, he'd laugh at me and go, you know, I want to take you back to all my islands and half the people are going to like you and half the people are not going to like you because I give you the navigation. But what he was saying was, I give you the navigation and you have responsibility to this navigation. And that responsibility, ultimately, very simple, is to teach. Because we have learned over time that the way you stop extinction is to make your students better than you. That's how you stop it.
Can I just ask, are you nervous at all?
I'm always scared. I'm not a courageous person. The triggers to get me to commit to something of this kind of risk, the big question always is your purpose and your intent greater than the risk you're putting people in? There's two key pieces, training, and then the other is having the intelligence about nature in a changing hot world. On a hot earth. But here's where I get scared. Because these young people I talk about, if I ask them, hey, you want to go? You want to sail from the Cook Islands in New Zealand through the intertropical convergence zone? They're going to say yes. Because they believe in two things. One is that they're going to be part of something much greater than themselves. And two, it's safe because leadership would never ask him to go if it wasn't safe. That's why I'm scared. I'm scared. And because they would go. They would blindly go. So we're going to watch it and make the right decision.
And thank you for sharing so much of your time with me. I think I'll probably see you next weekend.
Okay, Yvonne, you take care. See you soon.
The Hokulea returns to Juneau from Yakutat on this Saturday, June 10th, and sets off on its longer voyage on June 15th. The arrival will air live on KTOO 360 TV starting at 3 p.m. on Saturday, and the departure will also be live next Thursday, June 15th at 2 p.m. Thompson says that there will be chances to tour the Hokulea while it's in town. He says the canoe gets stronger when more and more people put their hands on it. For more, visit hokulea.com. That's hokulea.com. And read Yvonne's full coverage at KTOO. I'll put the links on the show notes for the page of this episode today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon 104.3 and KAQK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a wonderful Wednesday.